This is the offline. Is it the offline podcast, Philip, or just offline podcast?
Is maybe an un-offline podcast?
Or just offline. I think offline.
Yeah, I like offline.
Like Timberlake in The Social Network. Not the okay. Facebook, just Facebook.
That's right. So what are we going to promote today, Liston? Like, we're not real marketers if we don't promote something of our own.
So in the name of becoming real marketers, I am promoting the Opening Act Strategy Companion Workbook, Philip.
So is this for lonely people? Is that what you mean when you say companion?
Well, I needed a companion, so I made a virtual companion for myself, and I thought maybe you did too. But no, this is for an article that I wrote about how to develop marketing partnerships. And what this workbook does is it walks you through step by step how to execute this strategy. And
I have questions. That sounds like work. Why would I want to do this work?
Well, it is a bit of work, Philip. And, you know, I think the real reason you want to do this is to build some authority, to be seen in places where your audience already exists. And if you appear there, you're going to seem like an expert, whether you actually feel like one or not.
I have more questions. Who, let's see. What are the prerequisites for getting benefit from this workbook?
Fascinating questions, by the way. Thank you. The prerequisite, of course, is to have something to say and an audience to serve. So it's not going to work for you if you don't have a message. And in particular, I think it really starts with that audience. Like, who out there do you want to reach and help because you have to have their best interest in mind? Once you answer those questions, then the rest of it will fall into place.
I have another question. So if someone is lacking those things, would looking at this workbook help them identify those shortfalls and start thinking about how they might answer those questions?
Definitely could. Also, when you sign up for the workbook, not you, Philip, but you, listener, when you sign up for the workbook, there will also be a link in the welcome email to the original article. So if you're not really sure who your audience is or how to hone your message, you can take a look through that article. It's very in-depth. It's almost 5,000 words, and it'll tell you exactly how to do those things. If you wanted more help, though, I think there's someone I know, maybe you, Philip, who talks a little bit about positioning, so you might be able to offer some of that as well.
That's possible. Yeah, especially if you're a self-employed software developer. So, Liston, where should people go, aside from trying to read your mind or my mind right now, how can they get this Opening Act Strategy Companion Workbook Supplement Guide ebook PDF delivered to their inbox?
I am changing the headline right now. That's much better than anything I came up with. All you have to do is go to Liston, liston.io/openingact, liston.io/openingact, and it's there for free. Philip.
What's up, Mac Daddy?
Oh, you know, just balling out of control. You know how I do.
Yeah, I had to turn down the brightness on my computer because of how much bawling has happened on your end.
It's not because of how pale I am.
Well, that too.
Well, you were polite enough not to mention it, so thank you. So, Philip, I have to say that I don't know if you've noticed this, but we have people listening to our show now that we actually tell people that it exists.
What?
Did you see that we were retweeted today by the company that I use for my learning platform and coaching platform, Podia.com? We were retweeted by them.
Oh, I saw that and wondered what the heck was going on there.
Indeed. Yeah.
Thank you, Podia.
Right. Thank you, Podia.com. And I forget the guy's name. Sorry. Maybe it was Mark. I'm not sure. But thank you for the tweet. And there was evidence that he actually listened to it because he referenced what we said in the show and then said, oh, I was going to email Liston or tweet at Liston and say, you should check out Podia for your membership. And then I realized Liston is a Podia customer. So not only did we get the tweet, but he actually listened, which is the part that counts. So thank you.
He probably just had his personal assistant listen to it.
And also, I've noticed some chatter. I'm getting some Slack messages, LinkedIn messages from people who are listening. So you better watch out, Philip. This is going to become bigger than you and me before we know it.
I have to tame my swearing a little bit.
I know. You're out of control, man. You're like the Tasmanian devil over there.
Did you see that Wikipedia article on the movies that have the greatest number of F-bombs in them?
We've talked about this, haven't we? What is the number one movie?
I ultimately bring this topic up with every friend of mine at some point. Well, there's a movie called Swearnet, the movie, and there's another one called Fuck, a documentary on the word. And then the third, like, real movie is The Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh yeah. Which was a great movie.
That was a good movie.
And if I lived that life, I would have said the F-bomb a lot as well.
You know, that makes an interesting segue to our topic, because that final scene on that movie is kind of chilling to me, where you've got this guy, you know, trying to put his life back together in the way that disgraced celebrities do. And he's doing these sales seminars, right?
Yeah.
Where he's, selling advice, I guess.
And he's actually quite successful on the speaking circuit. So maybe one day, if you and I have a movie with enough F-bombs and we go to jail, we can have successful speaking careers.
Would that it were so.
That's the takeaway from this story, right? I'm not sure. Well, so yeah, we want to talk about selling advice instead of the executional stuff that we do, the hands and the feet work.
Yeah.
And Philip, you've been so kind as to share your experience with that. And in particular, since August of last year, you've made a huge step away from any executional whatsoever. So I will say, in full disclosure, Philip is the guru here. I do still have some clients at the time of this recording, but certainly this is an aspiration of mine to go away from that. So,
well, let me stop you right there.
Yes, please.
Big L, if I may, yes. And ask you, why is that an aspiration? Not that I'm like questioning it or think it should or should not be. I'm actually curious. Why do you aspire to get more or all of your revenue from selling advice?
It's a great question. So, you know, I think I realized sometime more than a year ago, about a year and a half ago, mm-hmm. that it just felt like a waste of my talent to do mm-hmm. executional work or deliverables for clients. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say like, oh, I'm so great and wonderful. It's just to say my natural talent was not concentrated in the area of marketing for my clients. I think my natural talent is to focus more on strategy and to document and share my ideas with other people, because I think I can make a bigger impact that way, but also I love doing it. I get so much more excited to do that.
This is me slipping in interview mode. Sorry. But last question along these lines. Was there an experience or something that happened where you kind of got a sense of, oh my gosh, yes. You kind of connected with what it feels like to provide the right kind of advice at the right time and then see this effect in somebody else.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think there was one experience. I think it was a mm-hmm. collection. So you and I were involved in mm-hmm. a mentorship program for the last year. And, you know, prior to that, I taught classes monthly for, I don't know, 18 months straight or something like that. And I just find that so rewarding, because mm-hmm. I can create, you know, it's not about having a momentary life change. That's not... Yeah. To me, the most rewarding thing is to help someone see something in a totally new light and go, mm-hmm. oh, I can do that. Like I was describing it today to a coaching client that I have, where he's giving a presentation. And the way I put it is, look, when you're giving a presentation, what you want is the audience, every audience member to say, I can be the hero in that story. I can mm-hmm. do that. And that's mm-hmm. exactly the kind of feeling I want to give to people. But I want it to be real also. I want them to actually be able to go do it. And yeah. That's very rewarding for me.
Nice. Cool. Okay. Just was curious about that. So you have that aspiration. I did not get there in one fell swoop myself. Maybe it's interesting to know that, actually, let me do some sort of just-in-time research here. There is a point I can identify on a calendar where I first got paid for giving advice, and I'm trying to look that up because I think that might be interesting context for folks, because I am not at all feeling like some kind of rock star, or I don't feel any sense of arrogance about this. So when I talk about this, I know that a lot of people aspire to it, and it's something that somehow I have made happen, but I also don't feel like, oh, it's because I'm so amazing that I made this happen. I just, it was a process. So 6/23/15, June 23rd, 2015 is the first time I got paid for doing something that was pure advice. And that was the first payment that I processed for my positioning accelerator program, this group mentoring program, if you will, for people who are trying to specialize, not just people, but usually self-employed software developers. So that was not when it started, because I got to back up. Actually, the first sale of the positioning manual was January of that year, 2015. And that was the first time I got paid. It wasn't like delivering advice in person, so it didn't feel the same. It felt more like I sold a product. I made money while I was sleeping, kind of thing. But about 6 months after was the first time I got paid by a person for showing up, listening to what they were going through, and saying, I think you should do this, or I think you should think about this, or have you thought about that? Like that type of activity.
Yeah, interesting. And what was it like in the early days? Because there's this feeling of, you know, if I'm creating a marketing plan or some content or a lead gen machine or a website and a landing page and a lead magnet and all that stuff, I can see it. It objectively exists. Mm-hmm. Whereas with advice, that's not the case at all. Here you're charging maybe more money per unit of your time that goes into mm-hmm. it. And in some ways, some people may interpret that as I'm getting less. How did that feel, and how did you deal with that?
I think it's a little bit like getting fat. Listen, like gaining weight. If you, in that it snuck up on me. It didn't, like the first moment that something was different, I did not notice that something was different. Do you know what I mean? I'm really out of shape. I'm not like fat, but I'm more out of shape than I would like to be. And that was a process. And the first step towards that was unnoticeable. It just was like deciding not to do something. And when I started the Positioning Accelerator program, it was like that because I was doing something extra. Most of my, actually at that time, the day before that first charge, all of my revenue was coming from a small amount of book sales and building things for people, done for you services, work for hire is what I now refer to it as, where the expectation is, because that's usually the language that shows up in a contract that you would sign if you're working for like an agency or a client, is, you know, all the results of this blah, blah, blah are considered work for hire. And that's what I call it, where you're kind of doing stuff for somebody else. And pretty much all my revenue was coming from work for hire in 2015, around that time of the year. And so I was just doing something extra. It didn't hit me until much, much later what it actually feels like. And it hit me when I was much closer to getting 100% of my revenue from that advice giving service, which had grown into multiple services by that time. And the feeling was like, so, you know, when you build something, it feels substantial. It feels physical, like it has weight. Even if it's just a digital product, it feels like it has weight. This felt like me going outside and taking some air and putting it inside a jar and closing the lid and then selling that to somebody. That's the closest I can think of to what it felt like. It felt really freaking weird.
Yeah. So it's not obviously tangible. It's also not air in a jar, by the way.
I know. Yeah.
So how do you think about approaching selling it? You know, I've done this for the first time recently, which first of all is amazing. And I can share my experience and where I got the process that I'm using, which is a book that you recommended, but we'll leave that as a cliffhanger for now. But how do you think about selling advice versus a tangible thing, work for hire?
In a way, you're selling know-how, right? Like, this is how you do something. That's one kind of angle to take on it is, you, dear prospect, could spend, you know, time and money and frustration and pain and opportunity cost. You could incur those costs and get where you need to go. So you don't have to hire me, but I can give you the know-how to eliminate a lot of that learning curve, reduce the pain, shorten the time between wanting to do something and actually accomplishing it. It's sort of like, I guess, being a personal trainer. They're not going to lift the weights for you. I mean, they might do it once or twice to show you how, but you don't get any benefit from that. So they're sort of saying, I'm going to help you become better at something. And that's largely what I've arrived at in selling my advisory services. I think you can sort of frame it as, I'm going to help you avoid cost. So I'm going to help you save money. You will spend money to save money, but you'll actually spend less money if you hire me to tell you what not to do or do this, don't do that. Those are all kind of different facets of how I end up selling it. And if I'm looking for a pithy one-liner, I help people make more decisions with greater confidence. And the specific decision is how they're going to specialize, how they're going to try to position their business. That's a way that I think about it. And, you know, the me of 2-3 years ago, looking at that would have been like, ha, ha, ha. How very funny that you think you can sell that. And I do listen, and I had my best year ever last year selling confidence.
Yeah.
You can't quite say it that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes you can if the situation's right, but the headline on my website is not, you know, get your confidence here. but in a way, that is what I sell.
Yeah, you know, I think there's two questions. One is, what are you actually selling? And the second is, is the way that you actually sell and what do you say? So obviously this is very situational, but you recommended this book to me called The Prosperous Coach. Do you even remember recommending that?
I recommended it to a lot of people. I don't remember recommending it to you, and I am now dying to know what you thought of it.
So I wouldn't recommend it to everybody. So one concept that I love in there is they talked about client creation. And I love this concept in that I think what they're really saying is people aren't out there shopping for coaching. What you need to do is show someone what you're capable of and then let them make a decision about whether or not they want to be a client. So I love that. And also I thought their kind of rules of the game of coaching was fantastic. And their emphasis on picking up the phone was fantastic. Now, one thing that I think is really interesting is they've gone full internet marketer. I don't know if you know that, but they're now like selling courses and, you know, running ads on Facebook and doing email marketing, which is exactly counter to their message for coaches about how to build their business. But it's a different business that he's doing now.
That's true. Yeah. Teaching people to coach is different than coaching. I'm curious, sorry to interrupt, but I'm curious if you thought the appendices were way better than the book itself.
I don't think I got all the way through the appendices. I think my recollection is the first third or first half of the book, which was kind of like, do this, don't do that. This is where all the coaches make the biggest problems. That stuff was not super interested in it. But I forget what they called it, like the 21 rules or the 16 something, basically their list of lessons that they learned through coaching many people for many years. I thought that was really well done and very insightful.
And I think that's really what the whole appendices is like. I actually, slight tangent, but I bought a copy of the, I bought the Audible version of the book. Yeah. Thought it was, you know, variable quality and parts were really good. I bought a paper copy and I was going to literally cut off everything except the appendices, just slice it down with an X-Acto knife right at that point. And then someone showed up who was interested in coaching and I just gave the book to them instead.
Well, yeah. So one thing I liked though, that, Rich talked about in the book, who was the, younger Aussie gentleman, was this idea of, you know, you and I have been exposed to some people who say, don't give anything away for free. And my response to that has always been, well, how does a person know what they would get from you if you're not willing to give anything? Like, that's not how a relationship works. You have to give to get. And I, one thing I loved about the book is Rich's advice was show them what it would be like to get coaching from you. And that way you don't need to sell anything. They either want it or they don't. And
you know what? I've started doing that.
So that's what I did the first time. And this is the exact process I used. I said, you know, I don't know all of your problems, but given who you are, feels like we have some rapport, you know, and it sounds like you have some goals I might be able to help you with. I'm really not sure yet. Mm-hmm. I would like to invite you to a coaching session so you can see what that's like. Mm-hmm. Does that sound interesting? And 100% of the time so far, people have said yes. Mm-hmm. And then I would do the coaching session. And at the end of it, the one that I've had, I said, okay, so now you know what it's like to be coached by me. I understand your goals to be the following goals. Would you like to move forward with me as your coach? We'd never talked about price ever. And he said, yes, it's clear to me that I want you to be my coach. And, you know, of course, it's not going to go like that every time, but I just felt like it created so much, I don't want to say goodwill, because it's not as if like my goal was to create some sort of obligation. It was just to show, like, literally what would this be like? Like, I can't, there's no way I can describe it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's... It's very interesting. I've kind of arrived at the same thing. And I think this is relevant because people who are selling expertise can probably work themselves into a situation where they don't have to do what we're talking about.
I'm sure you're right.
But I think that the way we do things now is probably a necessary step along the way. And there's also it's actually freaking enjoyable.
Totally.
It is, it's like, I don't know anything at all about martial arts, but there's like sparring, you know, where you kind of practice fighting. And it feels a little bit like that, in that it's more real than your marketing is, or it's an extension of your marketing where it starts to, the rubber hits the road. So I read that book and I read another, actually got a course on, I don't know, Udemy or something about selling coaching services. And I was interested to notice that they were the opposite approach. So one person was like the Udemy course. I forget the lady's name. And I didn't think it was all that much of a good fit for me, but she was basically saying, so you got to create, you know, your signature coaching program. That was, I just hate that term, your signature anything. It just sounds like BS to me. But anyway, your unique coaching offering that has some kind of unique methodology that you use. And then you have calls with prospects and you check for fit, but you do not, she was real big on this, you do not do any coaching during the call. That's a big mistake. It'll devalue you, blah, blah, blah. And then there's the prosperous coach approach, which is basically saying create opportunities to do some of what you do as this coach or expert advisor for free. And then that can just naturally transition into somebody paying you. And that's what I started doing, and it's great. So if someone wants to check out my accelerator program, they have to schedule a 30-minute call with me. And you know, part the purpose of the call is to make sure I don't make their skin crawl and they don't make my skin crawl. That's like one of the bottom line purposes of
right,
the call.
Right, sure.
But what I've noticed over time that I start doing is as quickly as possible, we get past the initial, you know, hey, how you're doing, blah, blah, blah kind of thing, the small talk. And as quickly as possible, I'm actually trying to do what I would do if they hired me through the accelerator program. And they, no money's changed hands, but I'm asking diagnostic questions. I'm making recommendations. And I'm trying to, in internet marketing terms, it's a demonstration, right? I'm trying to demonstrate what they would be signing up for.
Well, not only that, I mean, you know, as you know, I coach a lot of people on sales. And there's this idea going around that you should automate your lead qualification process. I know. And I'm, I always say, well, look, you know, one of the reasons you wanted to talk to me is because you said you need help with sales and you feel like you lack confidence there and you're not very good at it. Yes. Okay. So why wouldn't you put yourself in more selling situations? Like
silence.
Right. Like what? This is obvious. This, it doesn't come natural to anybody, right? Or very, very few people. And even for those who it does come natural to, they may not fully understand why they're good at it. Right. So, you know, with coaching, I'd say it's the same thing. Like you need your reps. You need to get in there and do it more often. You get something out of it. And also, even if it's not a fit with the person, maybe you just created a referral for yourself, right? Maybe you could solve their problem in 30 minutes that would actually change their life. That would be worth my time. I don't know about yours. But it's just interesting that, you know, to be a good coach, in my opinion, or to be a good seller of advice, you really have to come from a place of deeply empathy, like being deeply empathetic with the person and really trying to help them. And this whole idea of, oh, don't give it away, it devalues you, like that's all about me. That is not the right approach. I don't think. Yeah. It just doesn't feel right to me.
I think there people can make it work, but I think what is the approach that is more likely to work out just as a blanket? If I didn't know anything about someone and they're saying, how should I sell advice services? I would say create opportunities to give advice and you know, make sure you have enough time to do it the right way. So don't, you know, set up 5-minute calls if you need an hour. And anyway, yeah, it's just, it just feels so right. And this was hard for me at first because there was a certain point where I started to depend upon the advice revenue.
Yeah.
So it was hard to do what I'm about to say you should do, but you touched on it. If I can solve someone's problem in 30 minutes during that screening call, I will happily say, look, go take action on this. Don't hire me. Maybe later. Maybe, you know, maybe there'll be a reason to later, but don't do it now. And basically just send them on their way and say, you do not need this.
Right.
Don't spend the money. And there was a point where it became a little bit challenging to do that because I knew I was, and where it's hard to do that is where you don't have enough lead flow to,
yeah,
you know, do as much of your service as you want to.
Well, and I was going to say, you know, once you become an experienced seller of advice or coach or however you want to see yourself, and you have abundance, a lot of leads coming in, I think that's the time to the earlier point. Like there will come a time when you don't have to have a free coaching session. I think that's simply a supply and demand question. But you know what? Even then, maybe I would qualify my leads ahead of time, make them fill out a survey, and mm-hmm. I would cherry pick the ones that I really like and say, you seem fascinating. I'd mm-hmm. like to talk to you and yeah. offer a free call just because I would get a lot out of it too. So I don't think that would necessarily ever fully go away, but I think the reason most people will become pickier is because they have more abundance.
Let me run something past you that I think you'll find interesting. I have this theory that if you cannot invest your own time into your business, it will be difficult or impossible to run a business where what you sell is expertise. I know that was kind of a convoluted thing, but so if you sell expertise, I'm saying to maximize your business, you have to be able to invest your own time. Meaning you have to be able to do things where you're not billing the client or you're not getting paid immediately. And you're spending time on the kind of things we're talking about, having calls with prospective clients or doing reading to increase your understanding of something or doing research or, you know, all these things that you don't get paid for immediately.
So I think the short answer is yes, I agree with you. And the reason, but I do think you could fake it for a while and underinvest or not invest in yourself, or basically you are the product if you're giving advice, right? It really comes down to me and what I have to offer, and I can assimilate all of these books on my shelf and learn it all, but it comes down to how do I apply that information? How do I make it relevant? How can I, Liston or you, Philip, take what we know are good models or pieces of information for the way the world works and help other people apply those to their lives, right? So I think if you have an aspiration of being great at what you do, or even better yet, being the best at what you do, there's absolutely no other way to do it than to be fully invested in that thing, which means, like yesterday, I was at a tea house with my wife reading Influence by Cialdini and Contagious by Jonah Berger for content that I'm working on. This is on my day off, you know? And like, not to say like, oh, I'm such a workaholic, you should be like me. That's not what I'm saying at all. What I'm saying is I love this. Like it makes me happy and excited and I really just want to help people. And I read something and I go, oh my God, who can this help? Who can I give this book to? Like someone out there needs this information. And I think if you're not doing that and also working on yourself, investing in coaching yourself or being in a mastermind or some forum where you're being coached, I love that about the Prosperous Coach too, by the way, where they're like, if you won't buy coaching for yourself, how can you honestly tell anybody that coaching is important?
Yeah.
I love that.
That's huge. Yeah.
I'm done with my rant now, by the way.
So I ran a poll on Twitter, which, you know, is not a scientific
survey
by any means.
Oh, okay.
And I asked that question. I kind of posed it as a binary choice, which obviously is an oversimplification. I said, if you can invest, I forget what I said, something like $2,000 a week into your business or 20 hours of your own time a week into your business, which would you choose? And again, presented as a binary either or choice, no middle ground, no nuance in that. And the results were exactly 50-50, which I thought was interesting.
$2,000 a week or $200 or 20 hours a week?
Something like that. Yeah, okay. That's close enough. I would choose the time because I know that I can turn that into future money. There were two people who replied to the tweet with the poll, both of whom run productized services businesses, and they were essentially saying, oh, the money, man, that's a no-brainer. I thought that was very interesting. I got to resist the temptation to draw too many conclusions from a data point like that, but I don't know. Interesting.
It is interesting. I don't know. I guess when I went into consulting, for myself, that is, when I work for someone else, I really looked at it as a job. But when I went into it for myself, my whole thing from day one was companies are paying me to learn to market and to sell and to be awesome at what I do. Like it's a paid education, basically. Like I'm not paying someone else for this. People are paying me to do it. And in fact, they thank me when it's over. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, that I've always looked at what I'm doing here as an investment in myself and my education and my personal development. And along the way, and I think the farther I go down this journey, the more people I've been able to help. And so that feels incredible. But I also feel if I continue to invest that 10, 20, 30 hours sometimes, additionally back into myself, it's going to have a multiplying effect on the amount of difference I can make.
You know, one thing you did not mention in your reason why advisory services are of interest to you is profitability. Does that figure into your thinking? Or is that just a kind of a nice icing on the top of the cherry on top of the icing kind of thing?
No, that is part of it. You know, obviously it's not the first thing that comes to my mind, but it is definitely a part of it. I mean, I can, you know, I've been writing a lot. I'm working on a course now. I have a membership site, which I'll need a lot of members in order for that to pay the bills because of how low priced it is. But I'm happy to report I have 3 or 5 paying members now. So that's very exciting to go from no membership site a week ago to 5 paying members and a coaching client. So the point being is there's leverage there on my time. You know, as let's say I'm going to wave a magic wand. If I was able to get 20 or 30 members at the end of Q1, which would be like blowing my mind. But if I could do that, right, all the content that I'm creating for them and all the help that I'm offering them, I could offer that to 500 more people. No problem. I mean, there is a limit in the way I've structured the membership site now. And the answer, of course, would just be I changed the pricing. Yeah, I think that is part of it, is like the way I can scale my impact is much greater. And knowing that I want writing and speaking and delivery of information to a larger audience to be kind of the core of my business, this is the best way for me to go.
Yeah, I was, you know, I think my motivations around profit have not changed entirely, but I'd like to think they've evolved a little bit. You know, at first for me, with advisory services, it's like, I was kind of dazzled by the profitability of like, wow, I can get, you know, $300 an hour plus for that. And, you know, even more if it's leveraged through some kind of group thing. Holy cow. That's amazing. You're just kind of astonished at that kind of profitability. And then you're like, well, to what end? Is it just so I can, you know, lie on a beach and sip margaritas? And that's not why I'm doing this. Why I'm doing this is because I want to create a different possibility for people who are in my audience. And that possibility is they understand how to specialize. They understand how to use that to benefit themselves. And I can't create that impact if I'm like pinned down 30 hours a week just trying to pay the bills by doing work for hire. So maybe I'm just kind of flattering myself, but I would like to think that my, you know, the reason for seeking profitability has sort of evolved into a more social good reason, rather than just like, well, I just would like a nicer BMW to drive or whatever.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that's definitely true. And I think I do think about that as I'm able to help more people, I can obviously order of business number one is get rid of all client work or work for hire for me so that I can just focus 100% on how do I help people be more awesome at their thing. And in particular, I'm starting, you know, partially thanks to your help, Philip, and maybe you could be my coach because I need a kick in the ass on the focus side. But I am kind of testing out dual ideas right now. You know, maybe that focus is on tech freelancers and consultants becoming awesome at creating marketing partnerships, building their authority, right? Maybe it's on sales, but whatever it is, I feel like being more profitable gives me some resources to now make my delivery way better. And I don't mean hiring people, but maybe that means, you know, having a professional video shoot. Maybe that means making the website more interactive. Maybe that means making more tools, like things that would require other specialties that are not within my limitation set right now. I just say I'm not going to do that because I'm not going to spend too much time.
Right. Where are we? Looking at our outline.
Well, I wanted to talk, a couple things that we haven't covered are commitment and accountability, but and those two things being two drivers of why a person would be interested and really be drawn to coaching in the first place. But because we're talking about selling advice instead of execution, and this podcast is really intended for people who have thought about that and maybe haven't fully thought through all the ramifications or want to soak up your more experienced take on it and my kind of in real time take on it, I think the next thing is finding new clients. So I've experienced this where I've gone back to my existing clients and kind of said, hey, I'm doing coaching now, and you know, I can train you on X, Y, and Z. And they're like, well, aren't you just like a marketer? You know, I mean, I don't see you that way. Like, have you been able to, you know, reconfigure the position you have in someone's mind as a work for hire person now going into coaching and selling advice?
Yes, I no longer get inquiries that are like, hey, can you help us with this web copy? Can you help us with this email copy? I mean, those are sometimes, I guess I should be more precise and say those come now from people who are in some kind of subscription payment arrangement with me to get ongoing advice. And so I will provide feedback and stuff, but I no longer get work for hire requests.
Well, so in other words, when you first started to make the transition, you had people who paid you for work for hire.
Yeah.
Did you go to them and let them know, hey, I'm doing this new thing now. Let me know if you're interested. And did that ever work? Or did you just did you need to find a completely new pool of people to be eligible for this new thing that you're offering?
I think I thought it was the latter, and that's what I did, but I was negligent and completely overlooked the former option, which is obviously that's the smart way to do it, because that's how you did it. That's the, you know, hey, we've got, you know, these pallets, let's undo them and build something with them rather than, we don't have any wood, where can we find some wood? It's like obviously looking at the resources that you have right now, which are the relationships that you have.
Yes.
And seeing if those can turn into something different than they started out as, which they often can. So I'm kind of, you know, retroactively kicking myself for not doing that. I didn't. And my transition was slower. You know, the transition from work for hire to advisory services, it was like somewhat of a slow motion, you know, like 2 year long transition, more or less. So I never felt, well, that's not entirely true. I felt some pressure at various points along the ways, but I never thought that I could accelerate the process. And I think I could have had I done what you're suggesting. So I wouldn't say I found a completely new pool, but it was a sort of gradual shift in emphasis. You know, once I wrote the book, The Positioning Manual, that started a sort of slow motion shift to a different focus in my business. And that just I worked at it. You know, I went out and guested on podcasts and took advantage of every opportunity I could find to promote the book, which promoted, you know, me as the author of the book. And, and you know, it's interesting. This kind of relates to our big idea discussion, I guess a week ago. You talked about you're selling yourself, which is true. But if you have a big idea, it doesn't always feel like you're selling yourself, because you're kind of selling, I'll help you implement the big idea. So just a absolutely quick little nuance there.
I do agree with that. I what I mean when I say you're selling yourself is people need to buy into you as a person. Like, if they love the idea, maybe they'll go implement the idea, but that doesn't mean they're interested in working with you directly. If they don't click with you, or that there's just not a fit there,
yeah,
personality wise. So yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Anyway, so yeah, that's how I, you know, I kind of, started taking email marketing more seriously after I had the book. Like, I kind of dabbled a little bit in email marketing before that, but I just took it a lot more seriously. So that, I mean, that's the long answer to your question. I found a different sort of group of people. I did not try to say, well, yesterday I was write website copy for you, Philip. Today I am advise you on this major strategic transformation in your business, Philip. And part of that was just because I had to become comfortable with being that version of Philip. You know what I mean? Like, I had to grow into those shoes, and then that took time for me. I'm still not done with it, but you know, it's, I feel more confident now than I did 2 years ago with filling those shoes.
And to your point about, you know, the hard work that you did in order to expose yourself now as not Philip Content Guy or, you know, whatever it was you were doing at the time, but now you're Philip the Author of the Positioning Manual. People exposed to Philip the Author see you in a completely different light. I mean, I mentioned to you that I'm diving deep on this notion of authority, and what I'm really trying to get at is some sort of scientific or objective measure of authority. And of course, one of those things is titles. And so if you're an author, all of a sudden you're held in a completely different esteem than Philip Marketing Consultant.
Yeah,
right? So it's a totally different thing. So I think there's both. I think there's, for me at least, like when I look at clients who paid me to do work for hire, that's a messy transition.
Yeah.
They're sort of like, I don't, like, you're already firmly in this, you know, square peg, square hole in my mind, and I'm not sure how to take that out and put it in the round hole. Like, that doesn't add up for me.
Yeah.
And other people I've talked to, I've said, hey, you haven't heard from me in a while, this is what I'm up to. And they're like, oh, that sounds really interesting, I'd like to talk to you more about it. So I think it is possible, but I also think there needs to be a strong relationship where you did a lot more than just the work for hire for that transition to work. That's my two cents anyway.
I think you're probably right. I never explored that, so I can't speak to it firsthand very much. But and I think to make that transition, there probably has to be something that kind of pops you out of that box that you were in, that category in their mind. And
let me give another example while you think about that. Another example I would give is, let's say you are a designer and you design logos and brand marks, and you worked for a bunch of agencies as a freelancer and you picked up a bunch of extra work, and you came up with the absolute best, objectively best, however you want to measure that, course on teaching people how to make the perfect brand mark for any company. Your first pool of buyers would not be the agencies you sold your services to, because they would just see you as a freelancer, right? Mm-hmm. For them, you would not have the esteem or the authority to be the world's bottom line on this topic, even if it were true.
Yeah.
Right? So that I think that that's one of the challenges that we want to be upfront about, is there will be some people who are not going to be a fit for this because it is a very different frame in someone's mind.
So let me challenge you a little bit on that. If you were that person, that designer, would you send a free copy of that course or the book or whatever you wrote to those previous agency clients on the off chance that it does, that it is a impressive enough piece of thought that it kind of changes how they think about you?
Well, hell yeah, but I'm weird. Like,
I would do it too.
I would definitely send it to them. And I would say, hey, I'd love to catch up. I'm working on this new thing. I think it could really help you out. Let's chat. And if they blow me off, I'd send it to them. And then I'd ask them, what'd you think of the book? Right? Like, I'd follow up until someone told me to piss off, as the English say. So
I'm pretty sure I sent a free copy of the positioning manual to some previous clients that I did work for hire for. So that would have been my kind of, passive way of doing what you talked about, just informing them of what change has happened.
Yeah.
Hey, and that's actually a very convenient, easy way to do that if you're kind of, a an introvert or just don't really like engaging with people directly, is if you did something that has value, that's a piece of content and there's a price tag on it, send a free copy to previous, people who kind of see you the old way.
Well, Philip, I think what you just said, this is something I've been thinking a lot about. So this is a good topic for our next recording, which is, how can you ever build a business without talking to people? And I bet there's a way, but I think it's going to be a really, really hard road, particularly if you're trying to sell services. So I would like to chat about that next
time. Ooh, that's a good one, man. I like that. All right. I'll think about that as I'm taking a shower someday, maybe get inspired. I have an immediate thought about that, but I want to question my own thoughts about it.
I think we leave that as a cliffhanger for now.
Boom.
All right, man. Well, I think we covered it. Thank you, Philip.
Good talking to you.
All right. Bye.
Bye.